Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. I'm Jason Abrams, and this is the place where we lift the curtain on the world of real estate like never before. Every week, I sit down with visionaries, pirates, and mavericks. We're here to document, demonstrate, and most importantly, demystify their game-changing models and systems. What secrets propel them to the top? And how are they living their dreams? This is about passion, it's about strategy, but above all, it's about real, tangible success. So buckle up and let's dive in. This is the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. Hey friends, we are going international. Yes, you heard it right. We are leaving the United States and we are heading to the UK. This marks the first ever episode of this show off of the shores of the United States. We are going to be talking to Dominic Marcel. You are going to love this. Not just because real estate is done completely different in the UK, but we're answering a very important question. Can strategy be a value to a seller? And the answer is yes, it absolutely can. Dominic is going to talk about the way he thinks about offering value to sellers. He's going to talk about why having a strategy for each section of the home selling process is ultimately the value. And he is going to dive deep into how to use data to better represent our clients. Here's my hope, friends. Dominic has one of the largest and fastest growing teams in the UK. If we can listen to his secrets and bring them back to the United States or wherever you're listening from, you will have an unfair advantage in your marketplace. Friends, buckle up. This is Dominic Marcel. And today I am joined by Dominic Marcel. Dominic, how are you, sir?
I am very good. Thank you, my friend.
Now, this is historic. The audience is already saying he doesn't sound right. It's not your audio levels. Dominic, that's what we call in the US an accent. Where, sir, do you reside?
So I am in Buckinghamshire, which is a beautiful county just about 30 minutes north of London.
You heard this right, friends. The MREA podcast has went international. Today we have our first guest from outside of the United States, and we're doing this for a very specific reason, of which we will explain in a moment. But before we do, Dominic, you run one of the largest teams in the entire United Kingdom. Congratulations on the success, but I know no one starts as a success. What was your path into real estate?
Well, I like to think I fell into it, as I think most people do. You know, we don't have qualifications here in the UK, so you don't literally, you know, go to college and learn how to do this. You literally start afresh. So for me, it was...
Wait a second. When you say you don't have qualifications, is there any licensing at all?
No.
You mean just anybody can wake up and say, I'm going to get into the real estate business, I'm going to become a real estate agent, and then they just start?
That's what I did. Yeah.
Okay, so what is that like?
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes to a long way to explain, I think, the differences between how you guys are seen, your side of the pond versus how we are. But it is just seen as a sales job. It's no different to recruitment. It's no different to working in a retail shop. That's how it is here.
Wow. Okay, so you look up in life and you're looking for something to do. So why did you pick real estate?
My brother made me is probably the easiest way to surmise it. I went to school, got good grades, didn't go to university, didn't know what I wanted to do, sort of just continued my retail life where I was working part-time. And before you know it, 2 years fly by, you're having a great time partying with your friends. And then I got to the age of 20 and my brother, who was very much like a father figure to me, had sort of growing up with a single parent household, just pulled me aside one day and just said, look, you know, you've had your fun. You now need to get a career sorted. So he was a mortgage broker in an estate agency at the time. And he just said, why don't you come and do this? You know, I was a personal shopper at the time. So I was dealing one-on-one with clients. I've always loved that sort of psychology of selling. And so he thought this would be a good move. And I didn't thought it sounded awful because, again, it's not a profession that people tend to sort of look at high regard. But I was convinced to come in for an interview. walked into the office for an interview, and it was in the height of 2007, and the office atmosphere just grabbed me, and I thought, yeah, I could do this. This looks fun.
Okay, so 07 is great, but we all know what happens in 08 and 09. So like you get into the business, everything is roaring. Does it stop in the UK similar to how it stopped in the US?
Yeah, it was a big downfall in 2008. But I was very fortunate that I sort of sidestepped it. You know, as we moved into 2008, at the end of Q1, I had a bit of a fallout with my manager, regional manager on the sales side, because of the way that they wanted me to do business versus the way I wanted to do business. And essentially an opportunity opened up where I could go and open up, you know, a lettings branch. The business didn't do lettings. We saw it as an opportunity of expansion with what was happening on the sales side. And so I then moved across to that business.
Let me just, for our friends that don't know what letting is, Dominic, translate for us when you say that. What do you mean?
What do you call it? Rentals?
Okay, there you go, yeah. Friends. Letting equals rentals. We're all learning together.
So I moved across to that side of the business, and then that was in its ascendancy. So I didn't really get to experience the downsides of the sales market. I knew the sales market at a peak, and I just very luckily ended up moving across to a side of the business that then continued to grow and has not stopped growing since.
So then you're in the letting side of things. You're working with rentals. You're working with, I'm assuming, landlords.
Yeah.
How do you end up back into the sales side? When do you make the transition?
So through that career, I sort of went out of the business on the letting side of the business, became a regional manager, then became a regional director covering both sales and lettings back in 2016. Again, I didn't like how the company operated. I thought naively that getting to that level that I could make a change and that could be then sort of, you know, implement throughout the rest of the company. And then you realize that, no, you know, this is a big animal. It's a big machine. When you're running an office, you've got some control on your culture, but on a wider scale. And I just didn't like it. I thought we were scamming people, to be honest. We had no integrity. It didn't fit with my integrity and my morals. And so I had a decision to make, which was either sit there, be miserable like the 99% of the world and take the paycheck and moan to everyone at the end of the month, or you do something about it. And I was very fortunate that by a chance meeting, I heard about Keller Williams. I then went for an interview, and before I know it, I'm the team leader of the market center in Prime London. Being the team leader in the UK for one of the market centers was kind of my baby steps into, I suppose, what we call in the UK as self-employed agency, whereas you guys just call it real estate. That's just normal to you guys. So September 2018 was when I moved across to be a team leader. It was a win-win situation. It gave me a chance to learn Keller Williams and understand sort of how the model works. And it was good for the OP of the market center, because I could come in with a fresh pair of eyes and work out, you know, where we could sort of grow the center and how we can get agents into production. And what my end goal essentially was that I wanted to open up a market center in my hometown. And I realized that because we were trying to change the industry in the UK, you know, it wasn't a case of this is how we work. We're trying to say to people, you know, come out of your employed role and come and work this way. That if I was going to open up a market center in my hometown, I needed an agent in my hometown performing that I could use as an example and a bit of a poster boy to say, look at this guy, he's doing this, you could do the same. And I thought, well, who do I know that knows that town that could go and do that? And looked in the mirror and thought, go on then. So I literally did, honestly, you'd love it. It's such an advert for Keller, because I sat through Quantum Leap, and my self-discovery of Quantum Leap was, where you are, right, doing this team leader role is great. This isn't helping you to achieve your goal. So without even really hesitating, the day after, I went in, sat with the OP and told him, look, I'm quitting. I'm going to go and do this. He was like, okay. But it all made sense. And so the fear wasn't there to quit a job and go self-employed, but it was a bigger goal to kind of say, well, no, you've got to go and be a success as a solo agent, to then open up a team, to then open up a market center, and then onward plans from there. So it was just a formality. It was just one hurdle on the path that I wanted to get to. And so, like I said, normally you'd feel that kind of fear of going it alone and going self-employed and doing something really not unknown in the UK, but against the norm. And it didn't. It just went and did it. First day changed that. You know, when you sit there and you go, okay, this is real. Now what? It was great.
Yeah, we've all had those first days where you're like, okay, now I'm actually doing this. What the hell am I going to do next?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Dominic. I love that story, man. And now you're this mega agent. I want to kind of set the stage for our listeners on this show, because real estate in the UK is done differently than real estate here in the US, which is different than how real estate does in France. So it's different all over. So what are the primary differences? Let's start with MLS. That's a term that everyone here in the United States is familiar with. Do you have an MLS?
No, the only MLS we're aware of is the Major League Soccer. That's what it stands for here. We don't share business in the UK, Jason. We don't collaborate. Agents don't like each other. They don't talk to each other. They spend more time talking badly about each other and touting each other. You know, we can solicit on market stock in the UK. So you spend more to, rather than contacting an agent and saying, look, I've got a buyer potentially for your home, you don't contact the agent and split a fee. You knock on the seller's door and say, get rid of your current agent and come with me because I can sell it. You know, it's the Wild West over here.
Oh my gosh, that's wild to me. Okay, so we just identified, I think, three differences. Number one, you don't have an MLS. Number two, there's no exclusive right to sell documents. Is that right?
There are, but so our contract lengths are, well, it depends on the agency. This is a big kind of thing in the UK at the moment. Typical agent will probably sign someone up to a 12 to 16 week exclusivity period. But multi-agency is really, really common here because, you know, sellers want to put agents up against each other and pay the person that brings the client, not realizing that you end up getting the first buyer, not the best buyer.
And multi-agency means I'm a seller and I might contract with 2, 3, 4, 5 people to quote-unquote list my property and help try to find me a buyer?
Exactly that, yeah.
And then how does it work on the buyer side? Is there buyer representation?
No. No, I mean, there is on a small scale, but it's not how our industry works. And you'll love this. It makes no sense. Whenever I explain it to anybody, like I remember you, the amount of times you were like, no, but I don't get it. And I'm like, no, it doesn't make sense. You shouldn't get it. But essentially what happens is you as a seller contract me. I represent you. You pay my fee when I bring you the buyer. I advertise your home. A buyer sees it. The buyer contacts me via our advertising channels. And then I'm the one that effectively then almost sort of kind of represents the buyer, like unofficially, because we need both sides. And then, but that's why there is that question mark around the integrity of agents in the UK, because the question is, who are you working for? You know, the seller pays you, but you only get paid if the deal gets done. So really, you know, you've kind of got either, what are they saying to buyers to get the deal? And surprisingly, when a seller says, this is my bottom line, offers come in at the bottom line level. What a coincidence. So, but essentially, as from the buying perspective, you know, I want to buy a home. I see a home advertised by an agent representing the seller, and I'm relying on that agent to be honest and trustworthy and tell me all of the good things and the bad things about the area and the neighborhood and the schools. And surprisingly, you know, everything's great. It's a great place to live. You know, of course, everything's amazing. Everything's well presented. Everything's sought after. It's just, and it's why there isn't that trust here. It's just, it's crazy.
It's so interesting because in 1983, here in the US, the Federal Trade Commission did a survey. And at that time, there was actually no buyer's agency. All the agents were operating as sub-agents for the seller. And they did this survey, and it was like 70%+ of respondents said that they thought that the person who was opening the door and telling them how many square feet it was and telling them the price was representing them, because they were getting information from that person. And it turned out they were just sub-agents representing the seller, which is what leads to, in US, buyer's agency coming and becoming the law of the land in 1992. And we've been living with quote-unquote buyer's agency ever since. In your world, Dominic, do real estate agents make a living representing buyers and sellers? Meaning, do I look up as an agent and have a list of people I'm helping buy, a list of people I'm helping sell, or do they usually specialize in one of the two sides?
So they will specialize in one of the two sides. 99% of the time, it's the selling side.
Wow. And the average days between when I actually go under contract on a house and the deal actually closes, on average, in your experience, how long is it?
So from offer through to completion on average in the UK is about 102 days.
102 days?
102 days.
What, dude, what's taking y'all so long? We're closing deals 3 weeks.
Yeah, but you tell by your buyers about the home before you agree a deal to them, right? In the UK, the only way I can describe it is, imagine you go to buy a secondhand car and I tell you that I'm only going to show you the service history once you've agreed to buy it from me. Yeah.
So tell me more about this. So I see the house.
Yeah.
Then someone who's usually representing the seller writes an agreement for me to purchase the house.
We have our lawyers, property lawyers here in the UK that deals with that. So from my side as an agent, you know, I agree the deal verbally. We then send out a piece of paper to the lawyers to say, hey, this deal's been agreed. And then they take it over. Then the contracts are drawn up, but that's when they'll start doing all the inquiries. So they'll say, oh, hi, we'd just like to know a bit more about this house as my client's buying it. And that's when you're finding out, so there's restrictive covenant. And, oh, it was built on an old, you know, toxic waste mine and all these sort of things. It's slowly coming in. We've got some change in legislation called material information here in the UK, but essentially one in three sales falls through in the UK because we can't tie buyers in because we don't give them any information up front. Anyone can change their mind at any point without any form of financial repercussions or otherwise. And we don't honestly tell buyers anything about the house apart from the number of bedrooms and what they can see with their own two eyes before they agree the deal. So someone's benefiting from it. And I can never work this out. I can't get why the deal falls through. It's not good for anybody, but someone somewhere is benefiting.
Let's unpack this for a second. So the first thing we got here, because there's this idea that's kind of becoming hot in the media here that the way that real estate is purveyed in other countries is somehow superior to the way that it's purveyed here. And I'm not making a statement whether it is or it isn't. What I am doing is simply exploring the ideas and the facts. And so what we end up with here, and stop me if I get it wrong, we're just estimating about 99%, 9 out of 10 people are going to be represented by a seller's agent in some way. Number two, it's going to take an average of 102, 110 days to close a transaction. Number three, one in every three deals that goes under contract is not going to close. We're going to be starting that process over. And number four, there's a real estate agent, there's an attorney, and they're going back and forth. There's also a buyer and a seller, and we don't actually get any real disclosure about the property until already having agreed in writing, of which I can back out at any time. Did I pretty much get that right?
Yeah, but you missed out the fact that we have extremely long chains here in the UK. You know, you sell a house, you don't sell a house. You sell a house because I'm buying another house. And so we agree that deal, and then they go, lovely, I'm now going to go and have a look at some homes to buy. So they might take a month and then they find somewhere. And we're like, great. So that process starts. And then that seller says, hey, I'm going to go now find somewhere. So you can get these insanely long chains. And this is the thing that is insane. When you think about statistically, one in three sales fall through. If you're in a chain of three houses, statistically, that chain is going to fall through at one point.
Because ostensibly, they're all contingent upon the one previously closing because they can pull out at any time.
Yeah.
Wow, Dominic. And there's no MLS.
No.
So I know what's happening right now because I know my audience. I got a bunch of people who are all driving around in Range Rovers right now and their heads are exploding all over the mahogany steering wheel. All I'm simply doing here is highlighting the differences in the market. But Dominic, somehow you have still found a way to build and run an amazingly profitable business. But in a world where everyone is going after the seller, what's the item of value that you're offering to stand apart?
Strategy, I think, because of how many pitfalls there are. We have to, the way that we really win our clients and the way that we get so much repeat business and recommendations is because we put plans together to kind of go, right, these are all the pitfalls that we could come up against in terms of your move and all those sorts of things, especially with buyers and marketing, that we sit down and we have a really strategic plan before we even go to market so that the sellers know what's going to happen next at every stage and they're not fighting us because they know that it's part of that process. Look, you know, although the way that we work here isn't great, you know, I say don't feel sorry for me. I feel sorry for you guys in a way, because if a new real estate agent coming into the industry, there's no food left on the table where you are. Whereas explaining how we work here in the UK with no licensing and the sort of impression that people have of agents, if you're a good agent, you can clean up really quickly because people are begging for it. And it's what we found is bringing in your way of working, self-employed agency, all the sellers have gone, well, that sounds amazing. Like, well, that's the obvious choice. We shouldn't be able to grow market share as quickly as we have, but it's because we're now providing a solution to the issues that our industry has, or we're focused on what's in our control. But like I said, having more time on our hands allows us to provide a much more strategic offering to our clients.
Okay, well then walk me through this, because my hope here is that we're going to take some of the thinking that's made you in the top, you know, handful in the entire UK, bring it back to the US and go light a bunch of people on fire to go change some of the way that they're operating. When you say one of our values is strategy, it sounds a little airy-fairy to me. Walk me through sequentially so I really understand it.
Okay, so the way that we start the things off is, if you're selling in the UK, you're more excited about your reason for moving than your actual sale. So a lot of agents will think about, let's talk about the house and, oh my God, you've done this and the kitchen and the extension. That's all great, but they're selling because that's the past and they're excited about the future. So by us understanding what the future that they're wanting to create is with this move, well, then we start there and work backwards. What time of year are you looking to move? Obviously, because you need to be under offer in order to buy, it's that chicken and egg scenario in the UK. You know, your dream house, if it's available now, you could miss out because you're not sold, but you don't want to sell without knowing that there's something out there you might want to buy because, you know, you're going to be in no man's land. So if they're looking at relocating to a different part of the country, then we can introduce them to an agent over there that can help them out. If they're moving internationally, we'll do the same thing. If there's a time of year, if they're moving for schools, great. When do you need to be in living there so that you can apply for the school application and in time to get in there for this year? So we'll start with almost that time frame and the reasoning and then work backwards in terms of, so when's the right time to go to market for you? What we'll then do is that need to then understand, well, how speedy is this process going to be? You know, we get called out. I honestly reckon 50% of the valuations I go on, you can see the owner sitting there with a bit of an embarrassed look on their face and they bring up the phrase, yeah, we've actually found the house we want to buy. And you're going, okay, great. So now I'm going to be under pressure to deliver you the best result in a really quick time frame for a best price. But that's cool, you know, why not? So... So like I said, depending on time frames, we'll then sort of, like I said, we'll work backwards and then we'll help as much as we can on the onward. In terms of strategy then for them actually going to market, a lot of it we will go into really granular detail on who is your buyer. Ultimately, as much as the seller is our client, they need to understand that our most important person when it comes to marketing is the buyer. So we will use some really quite scary, to be honest, credit software, which gives us a profile of who lives in that area, from how many holidays they have per year to where they go on holiday to where they spend their money, how important are donations, how do they like to be communicated with, how much time do they spend on social media. So we're painting a picture of who's buying this house, you know, who's moving here, why are they moving here, what is it that they're moving here for, why are they paying a premium to live here, why aren't they living on that street, what is it about your home that's going to appeal to them. Then we reverse engineer the marketing strategy to talk specifically to that buyer. So rather than us creating generic marketing so as not to offend anybody, we create really specific marketing to talk to you, so that when you see that advert, you go, oh my God, this sounds like it. This is the one, this is the house.
This is blowing my mind, and this is what I wanted our entire audience to hear. This isn't we do the same flyers no matter what property we list. You're forced to provide value by waking up and thinking about each buyer individually and then tailoring the marketing plan to what you think that buyer would want.
Yeah.
That's a big idea, man.
But that's marketing. That's the industry we're in, right? And my view has always been, I have two jobs, market my business and market my client's home. You know, so sales, yeah, there's an element of sales in what we do. But unless you get the marketing right, you don't have the opportunity to sell to anybody. You know, if you're a real estate agent and you don't understand marketing, you're not passionate about marketing, then you're missing a trick. You know, you need to be surrounded by people that are, because ultimately... companies, there is a reason why companies like McDonald's and Coca-Cola still continue to spend billions on marketing, even though everybody knows who they are, is because the world is consistently changing. And if you're not completely familiar with who your audience is, then you're going to trip up.
Okay, well, make this real for me. You list a property, you run this report, give me a piece of data that you get back, and then how you use that piece of data to then go and target the right buyer.
Okay, so as an example, there is a type of buyer profile called an alpha family. So an alpha family is good jobs, earn good money. Their priority is their kids' education. They drive nice cars. They're normally 4x4s. They'll normally go on one holiday a year, but it's normally an extremely expensive holiday. And they're very active. They live very active lifestyles. So I'm launching a property next week, just over £1 million, in a very nice part of Milton Keynes where I live. But the marketing that we're doing, we are focusing on the immediate vicinity and the fact that you've got mountain bike trails, that you've got open air lidos, that you've got safari parks. So we're not just selling the house, we're selling the fact that you've got this on your doorstep and you can be part of another active community. My city's only, I think, 50, 60 years old. We were built by design and we're built on an American grid road system. And so one thing we lack here is a lot of culture. We lack of high streets and that kind of community feel that you'll see on all of the romantic British rom-coms at Christmas. But when we do have some little pockets like that, we really play on it because we're kind of selling that lifestyle of walking the dog down, getting a coffee on a Sunday morning and taking the kids up to the woods and going on a bike ride with all of your friends and all those sorts of things. So a big part of our marketing strategy is actually going out there and capturing that and bringing that into an open house event that we're going to be doing. So we're educating on the area, not just on the house.
And this idea, this quote-unquote alpha family, that's how the computer program classifies the people that tend to buy in this area.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, I love that. And because I think about £1 million, which is going to be like $1,250,000, give or take, US, just to give everyone out there a feel for it. Everything you're saying makes perfect sense to me because I would market that home differently than I might market a home in an area where those things aren't as valued as much. So once you get your message, do you then market it in different places or do you end up marketing it the same way? Because it's all driven through these third parties.
Yeah, we'll market it in different ways. So we do all of our marketing in-house. That's one of the things that I really wanted to make sure we had full control over is we do the design work, we do the distribution, everything is in control of us so that we can act quickly, we can respond to things. I hated in my old company how sluggish everything was with things being signed off or someone else's idea, wanted full control over it. So as an example, another home that I sold. So this house originally went on the market in November 22. It went on with one of the local high-end agents. They couldn't sell it. They put it on with a bespoke heritage agency in London because as an 18th century cottage, which was extended, they didn't sell it. They went on with another local agent, high-end, they didn't sell it. And I got introduced to them in September and sort of said, well, I don't think the marketing is terrible, but I think it's talking to the wrong person because they're looking at the price point. Whereas I looked at it and thought, this is somebody that's downsizing, although it's, you know, it's £900,000. This is someone that's moving from a more affluent county, probably closer to families, and back onto open fields because it's a cottage. It's got limitations. The kitchen's separate to the dining area, which is not what young families want anymore. And so we created that lifestyle marketing around talking to a slightly older audience. And then we did print marketing in affluent villages within a sort of 60-mile radius of where we are to put that advert in front of people. We had four buyers within 6 weeks for her. And she'd been on the market for 2 years.
So I'm going to focus on why. I'm going to focus on when. I'm going to understand when they need to have this closing happen. Then I'm going to do price. I'm going to make my go-to-market strategy, which is going to be data-driven. Friends, that's what I want you to hear. Data-driven. And you actually show the seller the data and say, here's the research that I've done. And that must blow them away when they see that.
You know what they all say? They all say, that was me when I bought this place. So they get it. You're literally describing their life. You know, you're sitting there and you're saying, this is blah, blah, blah. And they're like, do you know what? The guys next door are always off doing this or they're doing that. I had one recently, which was a really affluent apartment, which normally apartments are younger audience and first time buyers, no kids. But we were like, no, this is a bulk hole. This is an expensive bulk hole. Someone's selling from what have you. And I use this data to research, obviously, the clients before I go and see them so that I know how they like to be communicated with. So I made sure with these people that I went to see that I printed all my things off. They're not very tech savvy. So rather than me sort of, I'll email you this or that, I've printed it all. And I sat there and I showed them and said, look, I think someone's going to buy this. They're going to be downsizing from a multi-million pound home and they'll be here 6 months of the year and they'll be off traveling or they've got somewhere overseas. And they laughed and they said, the guy upstairs is away 9 months. And then and they literally said, you've just described the entire block. So they're like, you get it. And ultimately the sellers, you can come out with the best lines in the world, but people want to work with people that just get it.
That's so good. That's so good. So Dominic, if you're comfortable, and if not, just tell me no. Can you share the name of the company that you get your data from in case our friends here want to just go see it and see if there's anything equivalent here in the States?
Yeah. Do you have Experian as a credit agency out there?
Sure.
Then you can, I'm sure you can get it then. I mean, yeah, it's cool. It's a product called Experian Mosaic Portrait.
Experian Mosaic Portrait.
Yeah. And then what we can do in the UK is we can plug in any postcode at all, and it will give you a profile of the people that live there so that you know how to talk to them, when to talk to them, where they like to go, what's important to them, everything.
I think that's the genius here. All right, Dominic, so I got my strategies. I now go to market. What other strategy do I need?
So strategy around viewing appointments. So we will think about when's the best time of day to do them. We'll think about how do we actually walk somebody around. We're not just going to turn up and, you know, everyone's had buyers that want to take control over the viewings, right? Where you sort of, they just walk in and they're gone. And you're like, whoa, 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 you know, come back in. Well, so we'll think about, we're going to walk them through to this part and then to that part. But again, we'll tweak that based on the buyer. You know, we're doing a lot of research with them before they even step foot through the door with the qualification questions, what's important to them. We can do some research on them as a person. And so when they're showing up, we know, right, well, we know that this is important. So we're going to really press on this.
And are y'all there for every showing, or do buyer's agent? I guess you have to be there because for most of them, there's no buyer's agent.
So how it typically works here in the UK is that you have the most experienced and the most skilled person will be the one going out doing the listing appointment and winning the listing. That's their job over. They're just onto the next one. It then gets passed over to what we call negotiators, which are normally, you know, 20-year-old, fresh into the industry, don't own their own home, don't really know what they're doing. And they just turn up and open a door and hope they want to buy it. You know, but, and there's a lot of companies in the UK that have Saturday viewers. So bearing in mind Saturday, busiest day of the week when everyone is off work, ironically, you need a job to get a mortgage, right? So Saturday when they're off is when they want to view. And no, we don't want to work weekends because we're too important and I've worked too hard in my career. So I'm just going to pay someone to just turn up on a Saturday, open the door and hope it sells.
Wow.
And that's why when we explain how we work, which is you get me, you know, you list with me, you get me. Anything that we talk about, all the nuances about your home and all the things that you tell me that you spend silly amounts of money on that I know you're not going to get back because, you know, no one's going to pay for this gold-plated handle that you're really proud of. But I can explain all that to a viewer. You know, to me, I think it's absolutely crazy that agents send out the least experienced person to actually sell the property. That's when we get paid. That's when we can add value to the client. And it's not just an onerous task. Our job is we went to that seller and we said, I'm going to sell your house. We didn't say, I'm going to list your house. And if it sells, great.
Okay, stop the episode. I had to jump in because I don't want this to get missed. Do you hear how Dominic has a strategy for every single part of the process, even for the showings? Friends, I know that showings are done differently all over the place. I also know that how you arrive at price is done differently all over the place. I also know on and on and on. But here's the thing. The fact that he articulates the strategy during the initial appointments by which to say to a seller is, it's not about the tasks I do. It's about the way that they are done. That's the difference between doing something as a functionary and doing something as a fiduciary. Remember, a functionary provides data. A fiduciary helps somebody interpret the data and then make good decisions. Here's what I want to know. What's your strategy to get the most out of showings? Because if it's simply telling someone what time they can go by, I think you've missed it. What about things like, are all the lights going to be on? Are the windows going to be open? And by the way, you're going to say, Jason, yeah, everybody does that. Okay, well, you could take it a step further. Do you have a certain scent in the houses when you list them? I know an agent who does. Every single one of her listings smells the same because of a candle that she buys. You heard her episode. Go listen to Caroline as she talks about how that happens. Here's the point. Every property is going to have showings. The question is, have you sat down and decided what the best way to show a property is to put your seller in the best light? That's when it becomes a strategy. Then can I articulate that strategy to a seller to show them why I give them an advantage in the marketplace? That's called delivering value. My last question for you. You said we pay a fortune to put our listings on all of these websites.
Yeah.
When you say a fortune, give my listeners an idea.
So I pay Rightmove £3,000 plus VAT every single month just to list my homes. Then that's just one of the websites.
And how many websites do you kind of need to be on if you're going to be a player?
The irony is Rightmove is about 100 yards from my house. It's a Milton Keynes company. So it employs a lot of people locally. I'm not torn with it because they have a crazy monopoly here. But realistically, you know, we have probably three. Realistically, you can get away with two. But as long as you're on the main one, Rightmove is pretty much where you are. But obviously, we're trying to do as much as we can to lean into social media and create our own audiences now.
So, I mean, Rightmove, I mean, based on that number, that's going to cost you, give or take, $40,000 US over the course of the year, plus your second one. So you're in for a fixed expense of $50,000 to $75,000 to join the networks to share your listings.
Just to advertise, yeah. That's why I joke with him and just say, look, you know, you guys are my most expensive employee. I'm going to treat you like it.
Friends, there it is. It is a different world. Dominic, we want to invite you to the lightning round. We will ask you a series of questions. We want the first thing that comes to your mind. Will you play with us?
Of course.
Dominic, what is your favorite color?
Purple.
Ooh, stop the lightning round. Very regal and royal of you, sir. Back in. What's your favorite food?
Seafood. My family's from an island, so it's just inbuilt into me.
So fish and chips versus burgers and fries. Which are you ordering?
Yeah, this could be fish and chips.
Does it, though? Dominic, are you Team Harry or Team William?
Oh, come on. There's only one team over here.
Stop.
Come on.
That's a legitimate question here in the States. Are you saying that's not a reasonable question in the UK?
No, there is no conversation. Just, you know.
Fantastic. Pounds or dollars, my friend? Which do you prefer to have in your pocket?
I prefer to have dollars because it means I'm away.
Yeah, that's right. You're on holiday. I love that.
Yeah.
What's your favorite sound?
Don't judge me for saying this. My favorite sound is the Netflix da-dum, the when you turn it on, because that's like my off button. Because when I know that when I'm getting a chance to chill and watch Netflix, that's just the sound to me of like, and relax.
Favorite place to go on vacation?
Italy.
Ooh, okay, why?
Why the people, you know what I love about Italy? I love how passionate they are about their local produce. So we got engaged in Italy 2 years ago, and we did a tour starting at Sorrento, right down on the south coast, and it's all about fish. You work your way up, going up to Tuscany, and they're all about their sort of boar and their beef. And I just love how they lean into what's local, and they're really passionate about using what's on their doorstep.
Yeah, I've done that trip. When you're in Sorrento, you're in this walled city. You literally think you're in medieval times. You end up in a CC after that, and the world slows, and it speeds up. That's a fantastic trip. I love that. Is there a book, Dominic, that you have on your shelf, other than MREA, that you would recommend out to everyone who lists and sells real estate?
Do you know, it's a bit of an old school one now, but Jab, 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 Right Hook by Gary Vee. I love it for its practical application in terms of understanding different social media platforms. But I think the wider learning that I took from it was the fact that you have to communicate to people in a way that they're going to understand. You know, you can't turn up and start spouting one thing at people and think the message is going to land. You've really got to understand what do people go to different places for, and then sort of communicating with them in a way that's not disruptive, that's natural to them.
Love that. American football or soccer? And no, I'm not going to call it football.
I mean, I watched the Super Bowl. I don't get it. I don't.
Let's stop it. When you say you don't, let's just talk about it for a second. You watch a football, I'm using football now in your vernacular. You watch a soccer game, you have no idea when it's going to end. They just like arbitrarily add time to the thing. Everyone's falling down half the time, and I don't even know if they've gotten hit. And there's no one calling a play unless I'm missing it. Dominic, your thoughts?
Well, I was going to say the same thing about your football. I mean, what? Because you say, oh, there's 10 minutes to go. 2 hours later, there's still 10 minutes to go because they stop the clock every second. It's like the clock, what's the point in the clock? It just stops. You can't stop the clock.
That's, man.
Yeah. And you got different teams, people coming on, people coming off. Like, that's what?
It's called personnel. You got to change out personnel. And there's plays being run. Someone's calling a play. This thing where everyone's just running? What is that? It's this soccer thing where there are no... And what kind of thing you don't use your hands in a sport? Come on, Dominic.
The goalie can.
There it is, friends. I can't argue with that. Dominic, is cricket a sport or a game?
It's boring.
there it is.
It's I don't get cricket. I don't get what it is. I don't know what it is, but it's not for me.
So good. My friend, last question. Favorite movie?
Again, don't judge me, but Wolf of Wall Street. I just love it. I can't. It's so bad, but it's so good.
It's a great movie. Friends, there it is. Dominic, thank you for sharing with us. You are educating an entire continent today, separated, it seems, by a common language at times, but joined together with more things than divide. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate having you.
Thank you so much.
Print it. There it is. It's in the books, friends. Another show completed. Now, look, I'll agree with all of you. He's 100% wrong on football. And the things he says about soccer makes me absolutely crazy, as I know it does to the rest of the audience. But you know what he's right on? A lot of stuff about real estate. Here's what I heard. Jason, you got to know the moments that matter. And he went through them as it pertains to a seller. Then you have to know your strategy. What do I bring to the table such that my client has an advantage in the marketplace? Finally, you have to be able to articulate it. You do realize that Dominic's entire value proposition is simply tearing each piece of the home selling process apart and then making sure he has something that helps him stand alone within it. That's what he said. I think that's absolutely genius, friends. Think of it like this. Every single agent is going to do somewhat similar things to get real estate sold. Here's the thing you gotta remember. Number one, the seller and the buyer, but the seller really doesn't even know what those things are. Number two, you have to explain it to them. Number three, you have to have a way to stand out. That is what Dominic just taught us. Friends, go forth and do likewise. There it is. That wraps another episode. Friends, I don't know what you're taking out of this. I really don't. I'll tell you what I want you to be taking out of it, which is these are the people that are having tremendously big lives. And the reason it's happening is because they're setting up the models and systems to do just that. Gary Keller told me that leadership is teaching people how to think so that they do the things they need to do when they need to do them, so that ultimately they get the things they want when they want to have them. And that's what I want for you. You're all leaders. But it begins with leading ourselves. If you're enjoying this podcast, I want you to click the subscribe button anywhere that you get your podcasts. We want to be the voice in your head every single week. And every week, we're dropping new content. We also send out a newsletter at the conclusion of every show to make sure that you get the highest points and the models and systems that were discussed. So if you want to sign up, I need your name and your email address. Head over to themillionaireagentpodcast.com. MillionaireAgentPodcast.com. Enter your name and your email address, and every week that newsletter will be in your box. Friends, you just went on a journey. I hope that what happens between now and the next time we meet is absolutely wonderful for you. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information. Warning: you must comply with the TCPA and any other federal, state, or local laws, including for B2B calls and texts. Never call or text a number on any do not call list, and do not use an auto dialer or artificial voice or pre-recorded messages without proper consent. Contact your attorney to ensure your compliance.